Hello, and thank you for joining us for Growing America's Roofing Workforce, the podcast where we interview the people working to recruit, train, and retain the future of the roofing industry. I'm John Espenshade with the National Roofing Contractors Association. Our guest this episode was the keynote speaker for the International Roofing Expo last year, discussing winning the war for talent, something that I may be interested in talking about. The author of Winning the War for Talent, One of the Roofing Industry's Biggest Challenges, and the book, The Human Search Engine, joining us, Chris Zarnik. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm really happy to be here, and the roofing industry has been an enormous part of my career, so grateful to be here.
And thanks again. So getting into a little bit about you, your background, and how'd you get here? So why don't you tell us a little bit about how did you end up in this space of connecting employees with employers?
Sure. So from 2002 to 2017, I probably became one of the best known career coaches in the country. My job was to teach people how to figure out where they belong in the world of work and how to find it. And I've been involved in about 10,000 face-to-face job searches in my life. And if you think about the importance of that, nobody probably listening to this broadcast ever had a class in high school, college, or their master's program that taught them to figure out their personality type, their skills, their abilities, their talents, the problem they could solve, how to sort through the perhaps 30,000 companies within 20 miles of their home where they should go to work, how to figure out whether to go to work in professional services or manufacturing. And not only that, but nobody ever taught us how to do a research project on ourselves and where we belong in the world of work and how to find it. And so through my own frustration in my own life, doing it not very well, I'm a process manager and a process engineer by training. And so I created it. I created a process called Human Search Engine. Human Search Engine was a research project on yourself to help you figure out where you belong in the world of work and how to find it. Through the help of Reed Ribble with, I guess is the listeners know exactly who that is. If not, I hope we get into it, but through his work, he got, my work, Human Search Engine, created by, identified by the 113th United States Congress as a national job search model. And in 2017, they adopted it as outplacement for, people in Congress. And so I was a career coach long before I taught companies how to find people. I taught people how to find, how to find the right company to go to work for. And as one CEO in San Diego said, if you're fishing for talent, Chris just spent 17 years with the fish. And then Reed, after getting my work for job seekers to Congress, he asked me, he became the head of the president of the National Roofing Contractors Association, NRCA. And he said, Chris, you've been helping people find companies for the last, 15 years. Can you write a book to teach companies how to find people? Because he was aware of the demographic cliff we'll talk about today then. And I wrote the book, Winning the War for Talent, for the National Roofing Contractors Association. And my life since has been just an explosion. For all industries, mostly in construction and manufacturing, helping companies how to recruit, retain, and develop talent better.
Obviously, we can get into it talking about, reading the good things that he has done for not only NRCA and the roofing industry, but, at his time as Congress as well. So why don't we unpack that one a little bit? How did you come to know Reed and what was it like working with him? And what are some of the fruits of y'all's time working together on certain projects?
So this is actually a really, it's a great story, actually. So I'm in Appleton, Wisconsin. It's 2009. The local technical, so the world is falling apart, right? The world is falling apart, falling off a financial cliff. And there are thousands and thousands of mid-career professionals being laid off through no fault of their own. And I had created Human Search Engine on my own several years earlier. And that college, which was the president of that college, Dr. Susan May, who is one of the most influential and forward-thinking leaders I've ever worked with and for. She literally hired me to the college and said, listen, Chris, we're going to have thousands of people unemployed. Most of them aren't going to get any outplacement. So I want to hire you to the college to provide free outplacement for anybody who wants it over the next several years. And so I started teaching those classes. The program was called Job Seekers Network. We eventually had some 3,000 people through that class over a period of about 5 years. And Reed, whose office was in Appleton, Wisconsin, because he's a congressman from my area, without me knowing it, I had never met Reed. I had heard his name, but he's a congressman, right? So I have no idea who he is. And, you know, kind of, I wouldn't just walk into his office and say hello, because he's kind of at a certain level. And so without me knowing it, he heard about my class and he sent two of his staffers to the class for a month to say, listen, before I get on this hype train for human search engine, you two go to the class and see if this thing is exactly what it appears to be. So those two staffers came back to him and said, wow, he's really got something completely different. We've never seen anything like it. So all of this is going on without me knowing it, of course. And so one day I get a call from his office. The congressman would like to see you. And of course, I don't know anything about what's going on. So I'm like, okay, I'm happy to show up, but what did I do? like, did I do something wrong that I'm getting a call from a congressman?
You're getting a call to the principal's office.
That's exactly what it was. And so I come in, and he says, listen, Chris, I've studied your work. I've had my people study your work. You have something really important for not only Wisconsin, but also the whole nation. You've figured out what nobody else has figured out. He said, listen, I want to bring your work to Congress. And so if you will give me 435 copies of your book, because there's a law against apparently congressmen buying things from people in their district. But he says, if you'll give me 435 books, I will write a letter of recommendation, sign it, and hand these out one by one to everybody in Congress. And he did exactly that. I'm in my office and I literally have the letter he wrote and put in each of the books on my wall. It's one of my proudest things that I have. And then that, you know, that it just spiraled into my work going kind of nationwide before I ever got into helping companies find talent.
So let's talk a little bit about that first book, The Human Search Engine. I'm going to start with the most broad of questions, which is, what is the human search engine?
Right. So the human search engine, if you think about this, there's nothing in your life that you do less research on that's as important to you as the job you choose. So think about this for a second. Nobody listening to this broadcast had a class in high school or college. We taught you to figure out how much rainfall there is in Brazil by doing a research project. We taught you to figure out and do a research project on how many cars come out of Detroit in any given year. But the one thing that's the most important thing to most people here, who am I and where do I belong? Where are my skills? What problems can I solve? And how do I figure out where to go to work? We have zero teaching in that in the high school and the college era. Certainly, you know, when I was writing it, and for the most part, that's the same thing today. And so we wouldn't let a 22-year-old buy a $2,500 beater car without Consumer Reports, Car Gurus, and a mechanic looking at it. But we're going to let them choose where they're going to spend 2,080 hours a year for the next 5 years of their life by sending a resume to a person they've never met at a company they've never heard of for a job they've never done. And somehow we're shocked when people end up in the wrong place. And so as a process engineer, I thought that's ridiculous. Let's build a process where people can figure out by their personality type, their skills, their abilities, their talents. And then by doing a research project on other people and other companies around them, where they belong, and then how do you get them to them? So it's not only where do you belong, but it's an entire networking process, literally word for word. Who do I talk to? What questions do I ask? What's the purpose of the meeting? How do I send the email? And so I've tried to demystify it for everybody out there, and it's still used by colleges and high schools around the country.
So most of the people who listen to this podcast are kind of on the employer side of things for it. So through the lens of them, what are the things that they can do as an employer to try to find the people who have, in fact, engaged with this kind of introspection and try to find people who have a natural proclivity to some of the jobs that are so needed in the roofing industry?
Yeah. So there's a couple of really easy things you can start doing tomorrow. So one of the things I learned from those 10,000 job seekers is the number one reason people end up in the wrong job is because they don't know their personality type. And personality type, if you're familiar with Myers-Briggs at all, is an 85-year-old research project gathering data, but it's gathered data on 500 million people, not 500,000, 500 billion people. And so what I can tell you from all those job seekers is when they were unhappy in their job, the clearest indicator was their personality type. And there's I'll give a gift to everybody that's listening to this. There's a site called 16personalities.com, 16, 16personalities.com. It's literally free Myers-Briggs. It's not like Myers-Briggs. It is Myers-Briggs. As many times as you want, anytime. They don't ask for credit card information. There's no email input, nothing. It's free Myers-Briggs. And so if you took your very best roofers and gave them this test, you would find out that the people who want and love to do roofing are generally ISTJ, INTJ, ISTP. And so when we identify the right personality types of people who genuinely love to be outdoors, you know, 5 or 8 stories in the air, doing different work with their hands, working mostly in small groups or alone, if we know what that personality type is, now we can take all the knowledge that's available for free anytime you want on the internet to say, so let's say that the personality type is ISTJ. Well, then all you have to do is put in ISTJ values into Google and you will find the words, phrases, and concepts that ISTJs love, and you build those into the job ad. In other words, if you love these things, you'll love this job. So that's the first thing. And obviously it's a much deeper pond to dive into. But if you just started with that tool, took the test yourself this afternoon, I hope you give it to your spouse, significant other, all of your kids. What we know from this is if you know your 4-letter personality type, you can figure out very easily best jobs for that personality type, worst jobs, who you should date, who you should never date, mistakes you're about to make with money, you know, who you'll be as a parent. You know, people like to think that they're unique. And I tell them all the time, I'm sure your mom told you were unique, and that's adorable. I'm sure she was a lovely woman. She was also wrong. The fact is, the only differentiator between any people is your relationships and your experiences. And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing is realize that nobody knows where they belong. So one of the mistakes we've made for 40 years, because there were more people than there were jobs, we've made the mistake of thinking that we've been really good at recruiting. Well, no, people needed your jobs. There were more people than jobs. You posted a job ad, a line formed, and you got to choose who came to kiss the ring of HR and kneel in front of the altar of your organization, right? You weren't competitively selling. And so if you start selling your jobs the same, using all the same techniques and ideas that you sell your products and services, for the first time ever, if you think about the idea that selling a job is no different than selling your roofing services or your consulting services in the roofing industry, then and use all the same tools, the sales, the marketing, all those kind of things, you're halfway home. And so if nobody knows where they belong, we don't expect customers to come find us. We go find them. We don't expect customers to be able to differentiate ourselves from our competitors. We do that. And I teach companies to do the exact same thing and to sell their job ads.
All right. So before we pivot back into some of the breakdowns, the MBTI, the Myers-Briggs type inventory, are what, 16 different kind of boxes and buckets. It's an old psychological examination and it breaks people into personality types. Now, real quick sidebar. Do you know your MBTI?
I'm ESTP. And ESTP, if you look at that, it's the natural entrepreneur. I love new things. I love testing things. I joke all the time to the people who know me that rules and laws are just a place to start the conversation. And if you tell me to think outside the box, I will ask you what box. I don't even know it exists.
All right. So what I have right now, this is something I've used for some of my own family dynamic, is I have it being very close to May the 4th when we're recording this, a Star Wars character personality with the MBTIs. And would you like to guess which Star Wars character is ESTP?
ESTP. All right. So could it be Obi-Wan?
Not a bad guess. They have him as an INFJ.
Okay. Okay. All right. I am curious what you found it out to be.
It says it's Han Solo.
Oh, that I'll take that. And that makes a ton of sense, right? He's the dashing hero of the story. He's a little bit reckless. Rules don't really apply to him. Actually, that makes a ton of sense.
For anyone who's an ESFJ, I'm really sorry. Jar Jar Binks is not my favorite. But at least you didn't get ESFP, which is one of the Ewoks from Return of the Jedi.
If you have children who are 15 to 18 years old and they're trying to figure out, you know, where to go to school, and should I go to trade school? Should I go to a four-year college? Should I just go right into the workforce? This free test, 16personalitytypes.com, will literally lay all of it out in front of them. So go vet this for yourself, take it yourself, and see if it's on target. And if it is, I'm begging you to share it with everybody you know.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break right now and remind everyone that this episode of Growing America's Roofing Workforce is brought to you by Densdeck Roof Board. The forecast for your commercial rooftops is unpredictable. Extreme weather, flying debris, heavy installations, foot traffic during maintenance, drop tools, and the dangerous spread of fire can put your roofs at risk. So, are your roofing systems tough enough? To make sure they're resilient, you need to think beyond basic building codes. Densdeck Roof Board are made with fiberglass matte gypsum and are engineered to resist fire, wind, punctures, and hail. They can also serve as a rigid substrate to handle the extra weight of HVAC and solar equipment. When you anticipate these risks, you establish a reputation for building resiliency into your roofing systems. So going back to our conversation, in your book, Winning the War for Talent, what inspired you to write it? And how did you find that process when you started to get into learning about how to write it?
That was actually, so again, Reed asked me to write it. And I hadn't, I will tell you, without his request, I would never have written Winning the War for Talent. But all I did is I took everything I learned from 10,000 job seekers and I put it into an executable format for the companies that were trying to hire them. What I realized is that HR had never been in an environment where there were more jobs than there were people. They're training for the last 40 years through SHRM, and I love SHRM, but their training through SHRM always started with, well, when too many people apply, here's how to filter them out. Here's how to make sure that you stay within the rules and you know, interview and offer. What made the assumption that people were always going to show up, but we are now 8 million people short for the next 10 years. That's what the demographics of the United States says. It's been in stone for 35 years. It's no surprise. It has nothing to do with COVID. It has nothing to do with anything other than, frankly, the birth rate over the last 20 plus years. Anyway, so he asked me to write this book. And as I investigated writing the book for the National Roofing Contractors Association that he was going to give out as a premium to the members, I realized that the people I was trying to teach have never grown up in an environment where they didn't have it their own way. And if you think about hiring in the 80s or 90s, as a job seeker, you had almost no choices. You were just hoping that somebody would actually respond to your resume. If you sent out 30 resumes, you fully expected 25 of them not to even respond to you at all. And so that completely switched sometime around 2017 or 2018. And so the idea was, what do companies not know about job seekers? And how can we get people to think about the idea of selling a job in a competitive market? And even I can probably even hear in your listeners' minds, when I say sell a job, that hits very weird, right? We never had to sell a job. We posted a job ad, a line form, and we got to choose. And so that maybe the first hurdle I have to get through with every company I do consulting for is this idea that it's never going to back that way. There's no indication it gets better anytime, even after the next 10 years. But more importantly, you already have everything you need inside your organization, sales and marketing people, to do what I'm asking you to do. And so when I wrote this, it's really broken down not only just the demographics and why it's going to be an issue for 10 years, but what are the thoughts and ideas going on inside the job seeker? How can we make people aware of an industry that most people have never thought of or even considered in their life? And more importantly, how do we get their attention when we're competing with other companies?
Yeah, one of the things that I find very interesting when I engage members of NRCA and even people who are not members of NRCA that work in the roofing industry, I ask them, what was your recruitment process like 10 or 15 years ago? And they say, it's like, we just put a sign out front. Yep. And that was it. And I remember, you know, being, you know, young and looking for work just everywhere and feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't get a job bagging groceries. So to kind of see how much it's changed, you know, even in just the last decade and a half between, you know, such an incredible demand of people banging down doors looking for jobs to now the jobs banging down doors looking for people to do it. It's just a really weird switch that happened really quickly.
Yeah. And John, I got to tell you, I'm old enough that I remember a time when you had to wait for the Sunday paper to come out. There was no internet. There was no Monster. There was no Indeed. And if it was nothing in the Sunday paper, there's nothing you could do on your job search. And that's one of the things that Human Search Engine was about is here's how to take control and go after all the unposted job ads out there because great jobs never get really never get posted.
Yeah, because those have to stay within, you know, a network and you don't put those in the classifieds. But yeah, I might have been one of the last generation to circle potential jobs in the classifieds. In your book, Winning the War for Talent, you mentioned some case studies that you did to kind of, you know, pull some theories. I'm curious as to what were some of those case studies and maybe like what were some of the most shocking lessons to you when you started to go in and do those investigations?
So two that come to mind immediately is I was working for a company in Saginaw, Michigan. They brought me in because they couldn't get young people to come in and work in their manufacturing. It wasn't outdoor roofing. They were actually manufacturing products and services for the roofing industry. And so one of the things that we did is I interviewed a lot of their newest employees, and I realized that the reason that that teenager or that young 20-year-old had gone from, you know, working 10 hours a week at Walgreens so they could put gas in their crotch rocket and drink on the weekends to all of a sudden needing a good job with good pay and benefits was the birth of their first child. And so once we knew that, I helped them create a plan where we got a chance to reach out to the two largest maternity wards in Saginaw, Michigan. And we actually advertised the opportunities to new fathers who were, you know, holding this amazing, beautiful child, but realizing, wow, I think Peter Pan has to die today. And I'm now responsible for another human being and I need a good job with good pay and benefits, but how can I possibly find it if I have no education after high school? Well, if you know where the fish are and you know when the fish are hungry and you put the lure right in front of them, they will have a tendency to go after it. And so we had a tremendous response by identifying the events in people's lives that cause them to make a job change. So very, very quickly, bad boss is one of them. You know, a schedule that makes you choose between your job and your family is one of them. A birth of a child, marriage, divorce, some new level of education. And so the first thing that I do is I always interview the staff of the successful hires. And I ask them a couple of questions. What job or industry did you leave to come to us? And number two, how did you find us and why did you choose us over all the other jobs that were available? And that's what I think companies can take away from this immediately. And that is, there's a ton of data. I'm a data guy, right? I'm a process guy. So when you hire somebody, we're so excited to train them and get them doing the work, we forget that there's an enormous amount of data that they bring with us that if we don't ask them for it, we never get a chance to use it to find other people like them. So if I asked you, right, what event happened in your life that made you decide to leave your last job and start a job search, right? Was it bad boss? Was it the wrong pay? Did you get passed over for promotion? Too much overtime? Not enough overtime? So here's a really good example. We know from SHRM that 38% of everybody in America changes jobs because of a negative interaction with their direct manager or supervisor. Let's call that bad boss, okay? Well, the job ads that I write in the companies I work with, the most popular job ad I start with, it doesn't at the top say roofer, it doesn't say machine operator. The top line is fire your horrible boss, right? So what people need to understand, and this is what I learned from all those thousands of job seekers, is that changing jobs is an emotional decision, not a financial one. most companies are getting this wrong because they're trying to outbid everybody else out there. But two things are really important to understand about that. Number one, if people come for money, you can probably complete the statement for me. If people come for money, they will also leave for money, right? I mean, so when people bribe other people to come and then those people get bribed away, they get frustrated, but that's exactly who you got when you try to do that. And the second thing is that money is never, it's never the reason people leave. Now, you know, assuming that you're already at $15 or $16 an hour, somebody will leave just for money to go from $10 to $14 an hour. But once you get to a living wage, which in the most part, you know, across America is somewhere between $15 and $18 an hour, in a salaried rank, it's somewhere around $58,000 to $64,000 a year, then changing jobs and deciding to leave all your friends and everyone and everything you know behind to go to work with a bunch of strangers kind of has to be an emotional decision, doesn't it? I mean, you wouldn't just up and leave your neighborhood and all your friends and all your family if somebody said, hey, move to California and we'll pay you $8,000 more a year. It would be nice, but it's not nearly enough to make you leave everything you know. First, you have to become disenfranchised with your current employer or have some life event that causes you to realize that you can't continue down that path. That's what starts you on the job search. So if you embrace that, the job change is an emotional decision. You'll start to look for the emotional events in people's lives that cause them to consider to leave everything they know behind and come to work with strangers. And you'll focus your advertising on that emotion and not on trying to outbid everybody else out there.
So, and not only just focusing on when the right time is to reach out to potential job seekers, but to make your business one where, you know, you don't have those bad bosses. You know, you take that 38% out of the reason for the turnover at your company. And I'm curious, what advice might you give some companies who want to minimize that 38% at their company? You know, how do they make themselves a good boss and a boss that people wouldn't want to leave, assuming that the pay and everything else is where it needs to be for a person?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You and I are really vibing right now because I'm telling you that's the exact place to go. So the first thing you need to know is that the generations you're dealing with, millennials and Gen Z, are the first two generations who have had unlimited access to the combined knowledge of the history of the world in 15 seconds since they were 5 years old through the internet and Google, right? So if I'm known for any saying around the world as my work moves into Canada and the United Kingdom, it's this saying: when people stop learning, they start leaving. So think about that for a second. As long as you keep people learning in generations that are focused on information and solving interesting problems as a part of their daily life every single day, whether they're at work or at home, right? You're online learning something or watching a YouTube video or learning something. And so letting people become subject matter experts on topics in the organization, but it really starts on day one by teaching your managers and supervisors, don't tell people what to do, begin telling them why you're asking them to do it. So if you think about human nature, right? When you were 3 years old and your mom for the first time said, hey, John, put on your shoes. What question did you ask your mom?
Why?
Why, right? Like it's the basis of human nature is that we want to know why we're doing everything. But that's not really how, especially entry-level people, have been treated for 40 years. In my lifetime, if I got hired, I just closed my mouth, said, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. If they asked me to jump, I asked how high, and I never would have, in a million years, have asked why. But if you think about people's growth as a whole, all of it stems from why. So when you say, would you please move this pallet out of this walkway? So that's what my boss would have said to me 30 years ago. Today, you would say, well, here's what's going on. We had a safety meeting come through and we realized that pallet is blocking the overhead mirrored ball for the tow motor drivers. And we realized we've created a blind spot for the tow motor drivers and the pedestrians who are walking on the production floor. And if you move that pallet to a different place, you decrease the possible accidents and can change the life of somebody almost overnight. Well, now that person doesn't fight you. They say, well, that seems like a really good idea. I'd be happy to do that because I'm making my surroundings better and keeping people around me safe.
Yeah. And one of the things that I, I found to be the case when working with others and motivating other people, which can be really, it can be tricky and certainly delicate and can be very different, you know, depending on what their MBTI type is, and yes. what have you, is, you know, you don't really convince someone to do the right thing. You motivate them to do the right thing. And then all you got to do is praise them after they're done doing it.
Right. Those two things, right? Start with why. And train all of your supervisors and managers to begin with why. And then as people get close to their third year, give them an opportunity to become a subject matter expert on some topic that would be valuable to your company. Could be analytical problem solving, win-win bargaining, conflict resolution, active listening, EOS implementation, whatever it is. But now we have all these amazing platforms online, Udemy, Coursera, LinkedIn Learning, that you can literally have people and just ask them if you want to grow in the company to prepare you to grow to your next opportunity of higher level service, choose one of these eight topics, and we'd like you to become a subject matter expert and study it. What I teach in my process is give people 2 hours a week on company time for 6 months to use all the resources of the internet to study it, and then come and help teach it to everybody else in the organization. And so what you'll notice is that especially for Generation Z, purpose is the most important motivating factor at work. And you can give them not only a chance to grow, but serve at a higher level, and they will clearly understand the purpose that they're growing towards.
So recruit the right people, the right personality types into your organization for the right jobs. Give them the opportunity to train and allow them to develop themselves into roles that they might see themselves in the future, and thus retain them.
Yeah. And there's one other step that we kind of jumped over, and that is we know through data over the last 18 years that if we get a new employee to the 91st day of employment, they will stay on average 3.4 years. But they just gave up. They're literally walking into a bunch of strangers. And so I always encourage you to take somebody in your organization who has been with the company more than 18 months, but less than 3 years, and turning them into a mentor for the brand new employee, right? Because anytime any one of your listeners has gone through any trauma in their life, and I think we can suggest that leaving all your friends and everyone and everything you know behind at your last job is traumatic. Every time you've done that, the first thing you did was try to go talk to somebody that you trusted about that. Well, they just left all those people at the last job. So why wouldn't we attach somebody as a mentor to, and the mentor has nothing to do with the technical training. It has to do with introducing them to people, concepts, and ideas in the organization to make them feel welcome and as a part of it. And not only that, but this mentor program gives your mid-level people, 18 to 36 months, their first chance to grow into a higher level of service in the organization.
Yeah, and I've seen that work in a lot of places, you know, them having some opportunity for, you know, there are MBTI types that love to mentor and that want to mentor. But very often, most employers won't necessarily give those people who maybe even have that natural skill set the chance to do it until they get into some kind of position, and vice versa. They might promote someone into a position where that coaching and mentoring is a huge part of their job, but it's not necessarily what they're great at.
Well, one of the basic mistakes that companies have made, and I mean for the last 70 years, is we'll take somebody who's super good technically, and as a reward, we'll give them the opportunity to manage people. Well, that wasn't their skill to begin with, right? So I always say that's like rewarding a fish for being a good swimmer with a new job of climbing trees and then being somehow shocked that the fish fails to climb a tree. And that's why personality typing starts at the beginning, right? If you want to grow your technically adept people, give them a chance to grow at a larger depth in their technical knowledge. But people who teach and train, their gift is going to be getting other people to a higher level of capability inside the organization.
All right. So we're going to get to the end of our podcast here. You've given us a lot of great stuff here, Chris. Thank you so much. So let's hit a couple of the bullet points, starting with one, offer your people the personality test, or offer the people that you're looking to hire a personality test. And where can they find that?
So again, listen, I'm not affiliated with them. It literally is free. I found it about 17 years ago. I've used it at least 5,000 times in my life. It's called 16 Personalities. It's the number 16personalities.com. There's no hook, right? There's no email that you have to put in, no credit card information. It's an 8-minute test. And I would suggest that they go vet it for themselves tonight if they get a chance.
So have a look at that. Then take a look at one or both of Chris's books, The Human Search Engine and Winning the War for Talent. And what about one other thing? What is maybe one kind of encapsulating takeaway that business owners listening to this should start with?
Yeah, so start with the premise that nobody knows you exist and has never considered roofing as a possibility. So if you go ask your newest people what they knew about your company the day before they saw your job ad or you reached out to them, they're going to tell you, I didn't know you existed and I never considered roofing. You have to remember that nobody ever thinks of commercial roofing because it happens 5 stories above them. Nobody, like, we see people building houses, so people say, I could be a builder. We see people driving trucks, and so we think, hey, I could be a truck driver or a fireman or a policeman. People never see commercial roofing crews, and so the idea that people know we exist is the first mistake you're going to make. And second of all, nobody knows where they belong. And so those two things together, if you start that and ask your sales and marketing people, listen, if we wanted customers and they didn't know we existed and didn't know when they needed us, how would we fix that? You're halfway home.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Real quick before we sign off, this month's workforce development update. As schools start to prepare for summer vacation, there are lots of after-school programs in your community, and some of those include some kind of trade education, some kind of hands-on activity around working with the trades. And if there's one that you're involved in, remember that NRCA's track training for roof application careers, are free to career and technical education programs and courses like that. We are trying to get those as many places as people might want to learn about roofing. And also, CTE schools have industry committees for the trades. You know, they try to find people in their community to speak for different specific trades, specifically carpenters or HVAC professionals or plumbers or electricians. Do yourself a favor, the CTE school that does building sciences or construction or carpentry nearest to you, find out when their next committee meeting is going to be and put it on your calendar. Be the voice for the roofing industry in your community. And if you have absolutely no idea what to say at that meeting, please, you can contact me, John Espenshade at nrca.net. So signing off now is Chris Zarnick, author, motivational speaker, ESTP, and Han Solo. And I'm John Espenshade, INFP, Luke Skywalker, the idealist. And thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, my pleasure.